Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it is toy department time. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. It's a new day. It's a new time. It's a new world. I don't know. I feel like maybe I'm too excited to talk about what a new world, the new world that we have these days.
Yeah.
How are you holding up, man?
I'm okay. I'm a little on edge about whether the sickness has gotten into my house. There's a lot of coughs going around, but you know, there's just no way to know what's what.
Yeah. I guess we should both say that we are both, I think maybe in some proximity of the sickness.
Well, there's no question I'm in some proximity, especially after today, because half of my coworkers went and shook hands with the Philadelphia 76ers after the Warriors beat them last Saturday. So,
oh, do the Sixers have it now? I haven't seen this yet.
Yeah, an unnamed group of three members of the organization have tested positive. I mean, the NBA cases are up to around 15 today, I think. And that's really just because most teams didn't start testing until Sunday or Monday. Yeah. So we're just getting all those results back now.
A couple of Lakers, I hear.
Some Lakers, some Brooklyn Nets.
Marcus Smart.
Marcus Smart of the Celtics. And it's just, you know, the stuff with all this is you don't know where it came from. But and we don't even know if they had it yet when they came to Chase Center. But it's at least that close, and my wife is coughing at a rate that makes me nervous, but, you know, I'm trying not to overreact or panic.
Yeah, I have a friend who took the test and is waiting for the results to come back. Just the fact that they were given the test.
Yeah.
That's after scary. 3 hours of screening, makes it feel like it's pretty real. So, you know, I'm inside until I hear the results. Unfortunately, and
just out of curiosity, I think I talked last week about we are now doing shows from our houses. So,
yeah,
we are radio hosts on permanent remote where I work. What is the situation at your station?
We are preparing for that reality. We actually wound up using the app that you were using, so thank you for that recommendation.
Happy to help.
We are right now. We have some people who are broadcasting from home. Most of us are in the studio, and we're waiting for some equipment to come in. Some of that will change. You know, as we progress. So we're sort of in a situation where we are prepared for more. And I think more people may eventually go home. But right now, most people are in. You know, radio is generally viewed as an essential business.
Yes. Even music and sports radio, because people listen and we might warn them about things.
Yeah. So, you know, we're part of the emergency alert system,
right?
You know, all of that stuff. So we're going to stay open, I think. And I think that at least the, you know, the on-air people are going to be allowed to come to work for a long time. And for whatever reason, our company at least considers program directors part of that. So even though I'm not on the air, if this test comes back negative, then I will be allowed to return to work and will probably do so. At least for a time. So,
yeah, so it's interesting times. It's obviously the great unknown for all of us at this point. So, you know, trucking along.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw this today, but the and you know we're not going to turn this into a news podcast. Don't worry, we'll get to the distraction part here in a second. But the governor of Pennsylvania ordered closure of all non-life sustaining businesses.
That's like the next step up from essential, I guess.
I don't know, but man, that's like I can make the argument that radio is essential. I'm not going to make the argument that it is life sustaining. So
I don't know, dude. Last night, a DJ saved my life. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
You're welcome. I was working at home because for me, it's been like it's been not great. It's weird, like I. You know, because I'm doing everything through computer lines, everything is much slower. And so it takes me a lot longer. And, you know, there's more distraction. So I'm not quite as focused. And so it winds up being this like entire day where I'm literally working from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed, but also not getting that much done.
Yep.
And there's low-level anxiety the entire time.
Yeah, totally. I'm familiar with that life because I've done, you know, more serious, real jobs from home over the course of my life. It's different for me because I can't do what you just described, right? Because me working from home just means I, you know, clock in via the app for my 4 hours of live hosting. So it's not like I am, you know, there are no productivity issues. I will say two things. Number one, the distractions are still a factor, and I did at least one, if not two or three, pretty bad radio shows this week because there's just, I got my computer.
You know, you're
in front
saying
of me.
That into a microphone, right?
Believe me, anyone who listened would have noticed.
Okay.
Because the thing about being slightly distracted, I mean, that's kind of my general state when I'm hosting radio anyway. But when you're in the room with the people you're talking to, there's a certain compulsion to pay attention to them at some level. You know, not like I'm trying to ignore my co-host, but I'm just saying, like, you're looking up things on the computer and, you know, the conversation's going on and I'm pulling up a web page and I'm, you know, looking at a tweet. And when I'm in the studio, I can manage that because somehow having the visual cues makes it easier to track the conversation. I have found myself to be very vulnerable to diving down internet rabbit holes while the show is going on when I'm just sitting in my little room with, you know, my computer in front of me and no people. It's like, think about the way you behave when you're on the air as opposed to the way you behave when you're listening to a podcast. Like, it's a little too easy for the radio show I'm on to turn into a podcast in my ears.
Yeah, I get that.
Does that make
it's
sense?
It's like a podcast that you can just sort of, where they answer you back.
Yeah, exactly. So I really got to... Like yesterday and today were much better. But I really have to focus on focusing, if that makes sense. That's the hardest part about it for me. Otherwise, it's just an easier version of my normal job because I don't have to drive to and from the office.
Yeah. Do you get out of sweatpants at any point in time?
Derek, you worked with me for how long?
Yeah, I kind of knew the answer to that.
Do I get out of sweatpants normally?
I'm starting to think that I may need to go back to wearing real clothes.
Really?
You know what I mean?
You're like a businessman. It's different. I go to work in terry cloth shorts most days.
Yeah. I mean, I need to, like, I don't know. Yeah, I think I feel like I need to create a little bit more sense of purpose and seriousness.
Well, I will say this. Like, when I have worked from home doing more, like, work jobs where it's, you know, you got to put in a day and you have tasks to complete, it helps to make like a routine. It helps to give yourself some structure. Yeah. You know, like I'm not going to look at anything until I have a cup of coffee and a bowl of cereal and then I'm locked in for 3 hours and then I get a break. You know what I'm saying? Like programming the day for yourself can be helpful, I find.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't have a lot of distractions per se. Like, it just takes a long time to get stuff done here.
Yep, I know the feeling. Yeah, it's just hard to separate work from life when you're in the same place all day long.
Yeah, and when you're living in an episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah, that does not help.
You know, it's never felt more science fiction-y than it does today, does it?
Can't think of
All right, let's get into the distraction portion of this podcast.
Please.
Shall we? Because we do have some entertainment to talk about. And I'd like to get to that. Where do you want to start? We just watched Top Chef. Maybe we should go there. Top Chef is back.
Oh, thank God.
Just in time.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem with Top Chef is that I can't watch 20 episodes of it right now.
Indeed. Did you...
I take it back. Wait. There's one other problem with Top Chef.
Not enough Padma?
No, it's Leanne, man. Come on. Get out of here.
I have to say...
The challenge was cook fish on a beach over fire. She burnt her damn fish and put some crappy sauce on it. And Sasto goes home? Get out of here.
Yeah, it must have been a really bad Sasto dish. It's not like I haven't been fainted out by the editing of comments before, you know what I mean? Like going into an elimination. But that one did catch me off guard. I did a little fantasy draft with my family there.
Oh, wow. Well, let's start there then, because I have thoughts. I was thinking maybe we should do power rankings. Do you have the draft order in front of you?
I could call it up. I could call it up for sure.
Because I would love to know where people went.
Okay. So I will tell you that I had the 5th pick in this draft.
Wait a second. Hold on. Time out. This is a... You said family, right?
Yes, it's a 5-person draft. I had the 5th pick of 5.
Snake or...
Snake.
Okay, so you got 5th and
6th
pick. Which
is very confusing for some of the people in this draft.
I was going to say, I don't know if my family would handle a snake draft.
Correct.
Okay, so... All right, well, who was the first overall pick? Because I know who I would have taken.
The first overall pick was Kevin Gillespie.
Wow.
We're all from Atlanta.
Okay.
We're all huge fans of Kevin Gillespie, so it was not a surprise to me.
So that's a personal choice. I don't know him.
He's, like, my favorite chef, so I probably would have taken him first had I had
wow.
the first pick, too. So, yeah.
Because he looked a little out of his element.
It did not well. I mean, he presented a beautiful dish that I thought was going to clean up when he put it up, you know, put it out there, and everyone was like, "Whoa!" And then he didn't cook it great. But,
yeah, and then they were like, "It sucked."
yeah. Going back to your fish comment earlier, yes,
right.
So Kevin Gillespie went first.
Was Eric second? Eric absolutely would have been my first pick. Although, you know, the Voltaggio, you're way more chef knowledgeable than I am, both from watching historically more Top Chef and I think also just eating at fancier places and knowing more about the scene. Eric is the best chef I feel like I've watched on Top Chef in the, like, 3 or 4 seasons that I've watched.
Even though obviously he didn't win.
Yeah, I think he was the best. He had a rough beat in the final, but I just think he's been the consistent best of all the people I've seen. So
you didn't watch that Voltaggio season, I'm guessing, right?
No, but
I
saw the flashback where he lost to his brother in the final.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where it was just like, you know what I mean? It's what I imagine, like, the Lopez twins playing high school basketball would have been like. You know what I mean? We're like,
right.
You know, it's these like 2 7-foot brothers who like just crushed everyone else. And so, yeah, he was the runner up, but only because his brother was even. And then they, you know, and then they went on to open up hugely successful restaurants on their own, you know,
right,
on opposite
so
coasts. And like,
obviously, I'm aware of that. So,
yeah.
You know, I would have considered him with the first pick.
To me, if like without, if you didn't have a sentimental, like I, you know, if you're not a Kevin Gillespie person, I think Brian Voltaggio is the obvious pick. But Brian Voltaggio went third in this draft.
Who was
Gregory went second.
Well, I'll say this. Gregory has some style, man.
Yeah.
He looks
really good.
You know who he looks like?
I have some thoughts, but I want to hear who you were going to say.
There's more to it than this, but he has a very basic like facial similarity with Jaleel White.
Oh, that's not who I was necessarily thinking of.
But now you have to picture like adult Jaleel White, not Urkel, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I got you. I was going to say like hipster Giancarlo Esposito, is that that's his name,
okay,
right? You know,
that's
Gus
pretty
Fring.
Good.
Gus
that's
Fring.
Pretty good.
Gus Fring. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. So
okay,
then, so,
I
yeah,
liked
so.
Gregory. Like I said, Eric would have been my first pick, I think. Other people I remember.
You're going to be stunned by where Eric actually went in this draft.
Yeah, it must have been late. I also remember and enjoy Nene. I remember and absolutely do not enjoy Leanne. And who's the other one? Oh, Sasto, of course, but he's gone now.
Yes. So, fourth pick was Angelo.
Okay.
And then at that point, it came to me at number five. And I took Joe Sasto, which turned out to be not very smart.
Nah, man. you got screwed. Leanne should be out of here.
So I was bummed about that. Now, you have to understand with this next pick, you know, because obviously I picked six in the snake draft. I was also aware that this was really the last pick I was making because I had the last pick after that, so I was just going to get whoever I was stuck with. I didn't really love my first pick just because, you know, I picked five and all the people that I had envisioned picking first were gone. So I realized that there were better chefs on the board, including Eric, including Jen, Melissa. I think those all would have been smarter picks.
But I
was like, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say before you say your pick. Melissa, I did not know, but I was quite enchanted by. She has a very calm
she's
manner.
Great.
She's
yes, she's very zen.
She's
clearly
soothing.
A
yeah,
Libra.
I yes, she's a Libra. Exactly. She talked all about it. So I'm a big fan of Melissa. Jen, I don't know if I'm just scared of her, but not a fan.
Yeah, and she's not the sunniest, but she can cook. You know what I
mean?
Yeah,
I guess so. She was very,
she's
very intense.
Her for a long time, and she can make seafood. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but she also like her flashback was of her being just a terrible bitch, basically. And
yes,
she was like,
yes.
She's like, oh well, I guess that's not the right way to do it. And it's like, no, you're awful.
No, she's yeah. She, I would say, you know, I guess she, if you didn't watch any of her, I think she was on twice. I want to say, I think she did.
Yes,
have the
she was.
Somewhere.
She's already been an all-star.
Yes. By the way, there is a website. I don't know if you know this, TopChefStats.com, that I looked at before making all these picks.
So, oh.
All these picks that turned out to be terrible.
Interesting. I wonder, did any of your family take a statistical approach, or were they all like aesthetic drafters?
I don't know. I feel like they might have, because at one point I'm like, all these picks are too good. You know, everyone is doing the right thing.
Right.
Me. So with my second pick, knowing that I wasn't going to have another pick and knowing that I wanted someone to root for, I just said, fuck it, I'm going to take Nene.
I like
she
that.
She kind of got screwed in her season, and maybe she, you know, had something to prove this time out.
She's a lovable underdog.
Yeah. She also, and in fairness, right? Like, she got eliminated fairly early on her season, but she was crushing at the time. Like, she won half the challenges she was in. So,
she got eliminated because of her front of the house performance at Restaurant Week.
Yes.
Which is dumb.
Yeah.
Although she did screw it up badly.
Yes, she did. But now all my hopes rest with Needy, pretty much. Because I got my last pick was Lisa. That was the one nobody wanted. When they actually picked up during the thing.
Yeah, she was the last pick. I don't know, though. Like, she's experienced.
She's good. Yeah, like, just she went last because no one wanted to pick her because she was so awful on her season, which was a million years ago.
Yeah, literally 15 years ago.
It literally looked like you're watching Reality Bites. You know what
right.
I mean?
Oh, speaking of...
Back to season three.
Speaking of things that looked like things... I have not watched as much Top Chef as you, but this, to me, looked like by far the most opulent Top Chef house I've seen.
I agree.
It
I
had
agree.
Like
I
a
mean,
challenge
house
feel to
nice,
it.
But I do feel like they stepped it up with this one for sure.
They're yeah. always nice places, but this looked like a challenge house. Like it was
yeah.
ridiculous.
Yep. There's generally, they do that scene. That's like the real world scene where they get in the house for the first time. And
totally.
They,
and there's always nice rooms.
And, yeah.
yeah. But there's not always like a crazy outdoor staircase and a veranda overlooking the entire city of Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct. Well, you know, it's all stars, right? A lot of these are top
of
chefs. Like, you know, Kevin Gillespie, I think, has 4 restaurants in Atlanta and is opening like a 5th or something like that. So,
are you saying they're used to a certain level of luxury?
Yeah, I'm saying maybe some of them are. Although, of course, now the restaurant industry is in tatters, and I'm sure they're all broke.
Oh, but, well, that's man. It's crazy, but like, it didn't occur to me until I started watching this, but all of our favorite reality shows have got to be suspended, right? Like,
yeah.
They would probably be getting ready to shoot the next season of Top Chef right about now.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, I don't... You can't make a TV show right now, right? It just requires too many people.
I think so, right? That's certainly what I thought.
I would think even right. How do you can't make a TV show with less than 10 people, even if you're talking about like first take in a studio, right?
Even if you're talking about literally someone delivering monologues to a camera, I feel like that takes more than 10 people to get it done.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess they're making SportsCenter. Right?
You know what though? Well, but it's weird SportsCenter. You know, I feel like it's limited cameras and it's definitely. No offense, B talent.
Well, I mean, Van Pelt's still on. But yeah, you know, when he's on, it's everybody he's talking to is from their home in
yes.
you know, on a camera. So,
yeah, and that to me has to be Van Pelt just saying, no, I'm coming to work, sorry. Live with it.
You're right. It might be that.
Like, if Scott Van Pelt was worried about this virus, he would not be at the office. They would not force him in.
Yeah, no, that's probably true. I'm sure Scott Van Pelt can pull rank and say, hey, let's protect the franchise.
He's got to be the number one, you know, after Stephen A., right? He's got to be, like, the number one talent there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so before we jump off the Top Chef, now that you've seen everyone cook, you know, not that you hadn't seen them before, but now that you've seen everyone cook recently...
Yeah.
Is there anybody that jumps out to you as, you know, I think this guy is the guy? Or, you know, sorry, in a genderless way, obviously, because there's really accomplished female chefs here.
Of the people I had not seen cook before, I thought both Melissa and Gregory were pretty great. And also, again, both like, calming presences, which is out of character for Top Chef, I feel like.
Yes. Gregor is really good. And I want you to know, by the way, when Eric went in the third round, I said very loudly that that was an incredible value.
Because that's what I'm going to say now. Eric did his Eric thing, man.
Yeah.
He did a simple thing. He followed the goddamn instructions, which so few of these people can manage. He kept it straightforward, and all the comments were like, it just tasted so good, and I wanted to dip my bread in the sauce. And, like, no, he didn't win the challenge, but he just has this consistency of like, flavors that everyone seems to react positively to.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my mistake. Joe Sasta won more challenges on his season than Eric. And I was looking at the numbers and not thinking about that Eric just really consistently makes really great food.
The thing about Sasto, though, like, if I had told you, like, okay, Joe Sasto's not going to win the whole thing, so he's going to get eliminated at some point. Describe to me the comments from the judges when he gets eliminated. You would have described exactly what happened, basically.
I would have been like, he did too much and he made something other than pasta.
Exactly. Or like, he shoehorned pasta into a place it didn't belong. He did both of those things today. So like, that's the risk of using your first draft pick on Joe Sasto is like, he has incredibly high highs, but also very predictable, like, pitfalls. And it's just a question of, is he the worst one on the day when he has that pitfall? And I still didn't think he was. Leanne is trash, but he was definitely second worst. Like, they were clearly the two worst.
I felt I had to go high variance for where I was in that draft.
Yeah, so. I get it. You took a shot like Daryl Morey. It didn't pay off.
That's right. I went all small ball, and I got out-rebounded by 30.
Now, is this a winner-take-all fantasy competition? Do you gain points each week? How does that work?
It is a point system.
Okay, so you don't have to have the ultimate winner to win the game.
You do not. You do not. However, losing one person on the first episode and then not getting any points out of them at all for the season it's not really a good way to start.
No, I mean, that's tough, but ideally someone else will lose someone next week and, you know.
Yes. Yeah. Someone other than me better lose someone next week or I'm royally screwed.
So you got Nini and Jen?
I have Nini and Lisa.
Lisa. Right.
Yeah. You know, women with something to prove. That's what I got.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
no James Beards, but I got something to prove.
You got you have a very embraceable team. Like, you're the lovable underdogs right now.
I am. I am the Dayton Flyers. Let's do it. All right. Top Chef was fun. I'm so glad it's back in my life.
Thank God.
And I'm going to use it as escapism for the foreseeable future. You know what else was really fun? And I'm also really glad it's back in my life. And I will also be using it as escapism for the foreseeable future. Brockmire.
Yeah.
I'm really, I know you and I are kind of on our own little island on this show. You know what I mean?
My dad's with us, if that makes you feel better.
That's good. That does make me feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, I know of a couple of people who listen to podcasts, or host podcasts that like this show.
Yep.
I don't know that I've ever met anyone in real life who watches it. And it's just a damn shame because I really think it's really smart. You know what I mean? In addition to being wildly raunchy and funny and at times really like poignant and touching.
Here's what I was thinking about. Do you think you just fundamentally have to be a baseball fan to like this show? Because, like, it is smart and funny and raunchy and even occasionally heart-wrenching. But it's also fundamentally rooted in, like, an understanding and identification with the game of friggin' baseball.
I almost think it's like, in a way, sort of what's happening in the season. And for those of you who didn't see the episode, Brockmire is, he's the new commissioner of baseball. And in the future, 10 years into the future, when the world is a disaster, not unlike the current world,
yeah,
actually. Mind you, a lot of the current world.
There are some lines in there that are just priceless given the situation that we're in.
Yeah, no, it is really like oddly prescient, honestly, the way that all that played out. And, you know, no one liking baseball in 10 years is not that hard to envision either, right?
So, no. In fact,
I do think that baseball really serves as a barrier to entry for people.
Yeah.
But it's a needless one to me. Like, yes, there are, like, some, you know, lots of sort of poems to sort of the glory of the game. But I don't, you know, a lot of the characters in this show come from the perspective of who cares? Who cares about this? Why do you care about this?
But here's what I was thinking.
Like, not baseball things happening at all times. You know what I mean?
That's all true. But here's what I was thinking is just like, obviously, the whole show spins around Brockmire, which is Hank Azaria's character. And I'm just, like, maybe this is the best way to put it. I'm not sure his character works. And I'm honestly, I'm saying I don't know. I'm not saying it doesn't work. But I don't know if his character works for someone who if I was to describe his character to someone as he's just a classic baseball guy, if that doesn't mean something to you, I don't know if this show works. But if it does mean something to you, this show is spectacular.
Yeah. I feel like you would get it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if that didn't mean anything to you and you watched it, you would get it. But if it doesn't mean anything to you, you're probably just not inclined to watch it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not saying you wouldn't get the jokes. You all right there?
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm not saying you wouldn't get the jokes. But I do think you miss something. Like, there's something, the, like, beating heart of this all spins out of his, like, essential baseballness. And I do think, like, while it might still be funny to someone, I don't know if it would feel as essential if you couldn't truly appreciate just the incredible thing that Hank Azaria is doing.
Yeah. You know what else I appreciate about the show too is that it, you know, season after season, it has just sort of weaved these, like, new characters in. And I feel like you've known them after, like, two or three episodes. You know, by the time, like, an episode is done, you feel like they're just an integral part of the heart of the show.
It's a great point.
I don't really know how they pull that off. You know what I mean?
It's a great point. I think his daughter is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
She's no part of the show or his life in any way until she is, and then she's an indelible part of it.
Yeah. By the way, how great was that heart-to-heart
character?
Like, or so good.
Hank Azaria is on 1,000 here. He's just fantastic.
This show is a treasure, and I hope it's one of those things that, you know, people will stream someday and discover. I don't know, you know.
It's on Hulu.
During a pandemic when you can't leave your house.
This is Brockmire's first, what is this, was season 4, so there's probably 30 episodes of it or something. Which
and
is,
they're all a half hour. You can power through it.
I mean, they're really 20 minutes on Hulu. So you can slam 3 in an hour, and it'll be as fun an hour as you can have during a global pandemic.
Yeah. And we haven't covered it enough talking about how smart and poignant it could be. It's filthy.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Filthy. It is a raunchy show.
No, I mean, in this episode, just as an example, if you haven't watched it, to give you a vague idea, and this was not a raunchy episode, but in a not raunchy episode, a man steals a hologram projector signs up for a masturbatorium, specifically asks to have a hologram of Anne Margaret sit on his face, and then is interrupted by his daughter, to whom he, I guess he scolds her for not accepting his kink of wanting hologram
you
Anne Margaret.
You would not kink shame me. I raised you to be in a sex positive household.
That was incredible.
All right. I love Breath Fire.
It's such a good show.
Let's talk about one more little bit of escapism before we get into the heavy shit. How's that?
Sure.
Black Monday is back. And it is once again on 10. You know what I mean? Like, it is turned way the fuck up.
Yes. But is it a 10, though? Because it's on 10. To me, though, it's maybe like a 6 now.
Yeah, no, it's a 6.
Yeah.
You know, it's a 6. I don't know, this season may get better. You know what I mean? But I feel like we know what the show is now.
Yep.
It's mostly these actors and the writers, like, trying to amuse themselves and have fun. And, you know, sometimes it really lands stuff. And if you want to see Andrew Reynolds and Casey Wilson ham it up.
Yeah.
You know, and Don Cheadle and Regina Hall ham it up. And yeah. Paul Scheer ham it up. Like, you're going to get all that. You know
so,
what I mean? So,
this is a strange analogy, but... You're a Mad Men guy, right?
I am, yes.
Yeah. I was never a Mad Men guy. And my criticism of Mad Men, which, admittedly, I only watched the first, like, 7 episodes, and everyone will tell me and anyone who wants to listen that this was a bit of a problem in the first 7 episodes and sort of went away. My criticism of Mad Men was always, I get it, it's the 50s. Ad men drink at work. It looks really cool. That's not enough to sustain my interest for 7 episodes.
Oh, yeah. Man, Mad Men became so much more than
that. I know, but
that.
This isn't about Mad Men. Black Monday has a little more to the log line than it's the 80s, people are doing cocaine on Wall Street, but not a lot more. And... I'm not sure how much more there is here outside of that. It's an aesthetic.
Yeah,
it's funny at times, but it feels totally inessential.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And certainly we know that Showtime has a propensity to let shows linger. We've talked about it many times.
Yeah. Couldn't bring roadies back for us, though.
No. Or what was that stand-up comedy show that I liked for a minute? Oh, I think I'm Dying Up Here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that at least got a couple seasons, right?
I think it 2. Yeah, I believe it got 2. But yeah, there's I don't know. I don't know if they have enough to make it to the end of the season 2 on this one, and we probably want to put like season 5.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. All right, that's enough said about the Black Monday. You want to talk about little fires everywhere?
I do. Did you watch all 3?
I watched 2.
Me too. Okay. So, first of all, like, if this was like a binary system... I'm thumbs up here. But there's... I don't know how to explain how I feel about this show. It is... It's interesting. And I want to know more about kind of everybody. But I'm not sure what it is that's happening in terms... Like, I really don't know what this show is.
In what way do you not know what it is?
Well, like, beyond the word, beyond, like, you know, hour-long drama, how would you describe, like, the genre of this show? Or the archetype or something?
Well, I feel like it's sort of, I mean, I don't know, I guess reason for this literary adaptation is a little bit too on the nose. But right. I don't feel like it's all that different from, like, Big Little Lies. You know what I mean? Like, obviously it's different tonally. But
Big Little Lies had a very specific tone and also a pretty specific, like, mystery feel to it. And although...
Yeah, this show has that, right? Like, you know...
Well, it has mysterious characters, but is there a mystery?
He's
going to
burn
se?
The house down, right?
Yeah, I guess.
He's going to burn the house down.
Someone's going to burn the house down. Yeah. You're right.
Someone's going to burn the house down, and we think, you know, Izzy seems like the prime candidate. That's fair enough. She may not be the person that burns the house.
I mean, it can't be her, right? Be too easy.
It could be her. I think it just could be a, like, a how do we get there sort of situation, or it could be a giant red herring. Those are the only two options, really, right? So
yeah, it felt like a giant red herring to me. But I will say this, like, the people who spent the most time on screen... Reese Witherspoon, Kerry Washington, and their two daughters, and Moody. Like, I love these characters. I'm totally sticking around. I'm here for this. I want to know what's going to happen. But like, I'm also... It's one of those shows where, like, I don't jump and hit the button for the next episode. I, like, stare at the screen curiously until the next episode starts.
Okay, so you I guess have a better functioning Hulu app than I do.
I must.
My Hulu does not automatically play the next episode, so like I have to consciously make a choice to watch another one. But it, you know, the weight of this show is such that I'm typically not doing that. Not in a bad way. It's not a super bingeable show.
No.
You know what I mean?
And I'm not. I didn't mean it that way exactly. So much as just like I stare at the credits, kind of wondering what just happened each episode. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just this is a curious show.
It is a bit of a curious show. I know you were here for all the characters. I gotta say. You know, both Reese and Kerry Washington are really kind of playing to type a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little bit over seeing Reese Witherspoon as the tightly wound suburban housewife with good intentions who goes overboard.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to give that a little time. On its face, this character is almost identical to, what is it, Madeline in Big Little Lies?
Yeah.
Almost identical. On its face, down to the weird relationship with her husband. But I get the feeling there's something different happening. I just think the question is, how different is Reese Witherspoon going to play it? And I guess
they are sort of setting it up like she's you know, headed towards some kind of awakening, some sort of spiritual awakening. But like, it really does, like, you know, knowing that she recently was a producer on Big Little Lies and this. Like, I almost feel like she's walking around sort of looking for these parts to play.
It feels a little like she's typecasting herself, right?
Yeah, which is strange because she's quite, you know, like, if you see her in something like Wild, like, she's quite good against type when she wants to do it. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. That part was not my favorite. But I love Pearl. That character is
incredible.
A great character, and I don't know the actress that's playing her, but she is magnetic on the screen.
How about this? She's playing 15, the actress. And she looks 25.
Yeah. I'm not going to comment on that because I'm old and I can't tell how old.
Well, hold on. She looks anymore. I was like, "God, she looks 25." And my wife was like, well, I don't know about 25, but she's probably 20. Let's Google it. She's 16.
16!
Wow. She's 16, and she is murdering this role as an actress. It's like a complex, interesting, thoughtful performance that is pretty remarkable from a 16-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the chaste romance that she has with Moody is pretty.
It's wonderful.
You could tell. You could tell it's straight out of a novel. You know.
Yes.
What I mean?
Of course. Yeah. When they go to the like junkyard and he has his like little room set up. Yeah, it's straight out of a book. But you know, characters are often better drawn in books than they are in TV and movies, and I think this series is taking advantage of that. And I do want to say this, and maybe sort of in the context of Reese Witherspoon choosing roles like this, the conversation they have about parenthood, and maybe it's partly that I'm a new parent, but I thought that was incredibly powerful between Reese Witherspoon and Kerry Washington, and that seems to me like the sort of thing that draws someone to a part like this.
Yeah, there are certainly some powerful conversations in the first two episodes. I hope and kind of assume, at least based on sort of the flash forward that starts the show, that they're going to give Josh Jackson more to do.
Yes.
Because Josh Jackson does good things. When
everybody loves Pacey.
Time to do things. Yes, everybody loves Pacey. I love the 90s vibes that are happening, save that horrendous Sex and Candy cover that ends the first episode.
I've heard that before. Why does that exist, and why do people keep using it?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what's
probably
better?
Probably because they are unable to license the real Sex and Candy.
Is that what it is? Will Marcy Playground not clear Sex and Candy? Because it's such
I don't know.
It's a spectacular song, and quite frankly, it would have fit great where the crappy cover version went.
Right. Well, and everything else, right? All the other songs they've been using have been period appropriate, right? So, it did definitely make me wonder. Either somebody really likes that version, or Marcy Playground said no.
By the way, speaking of,
I imagine if you're Marcy Playground, most of you, like, what the extent to which you're living your life at this point comes from licensing Sex and Candy, right?
Exactly. So why would you do that?
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
But
by the way, I drive by the Marcy Playground on the way home from work every day.
Oh, nice. I stand for that album. The whole thing.
The whole thing. St. Joe and the School Bus and all of it.
All the weird. It's a weird little album that probably never should have existed.
90s. It's very 90s, that album.
It is, but it's a good listen the whole way through. It's odd and like small, but I really like it.
It's one of those things that can happen then. There was like bands like them and like Harvey Danger.
Yeah,
that,
Harvey Danger.
You know, were like genuinely weird bands that like stumbled into this like one pop hit song that they were never going to be able to reproduce. You know what I mean? They got people to listen to a lot of weird albums. And that was one of the, I feel like, delights of the 90s.
I mean, people listened to Primus because somehow Winona's Big Brown Beaver became a single.
Yeah.
The 90s was a crazy time.
It was a crazy time. By the way, Not Your Puppet was really pretty, like a really genuinely punk rock move that I really kind of enjoyed.
Yes, it was so punk rock. That's what I'm saying. This show, like, it's alluring and fascinating, and it's not weird like Dispatches from Elsewhere is weird, right? But it's like, it's sort of undefined in a way. There's something about it that I can't put my finger on, and I don't know, maybe I like that about it.
Yeah, no, I like that too. I'm going to watch the rest of it, but I'm not going to devour it because it's hard to do that.
Yeah, they're big bites.
Yeah, exactly. It's a rich meal.
Speaking of 90s stuff, though, the car phone is phenomenal. Did you ever? Yes, my dad had one of those.
My dad did eventually get a car phone. I feel like that might have been a little bit more late 90s, but I don't know.
Maybe. But, like, the whole phone on a cord that you, like, hang up in the console, just hilarious.
Yes.
My, how far we've come.
All right, you want to talk about the plot against America? You want to talk about some 40s style?
So, I have a question that I don't know if you know the answer to. Is this a miniseries?
I believe it's 10 episodes.
But I mean, is that like 10 episodes and we're out? It's the end of the book? We're done?
I kind of think that's the plan, yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know that, honestly. I just think that's the plan.
Yeah, I don't know either. The first thing I want to say about this is, God, it's intense. And if I'm not quite sure what's happening in Little Fires Everywhere, I think everybody knows exactly what's happening here.
What known as Big Brown Beaver is happening.
Easy. Winona's good.
It is a mini series per Wikipedia.
Okay.
So there you go.
Everyone's good in this. The writing's good in this.
And only 6 episodes.
If I had a criticism, especially given that information, it would be that it appears to be proceeding at the somewhat languid pace that a David Simon piece often does. And
I felt the same way.
I think I need a little more juice.
It's a lot of just let's get to know some characters. Yep. You know what I mean? Not that nothing happens. I mean, there's
stuff happens.
Several people get their ass kicked.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Over the course of this hour.
And I'm sure
a lot of people yell.
And I'm sure the yelling and the ass kicking only increases in volume as the show goes on. But boy,
somebody gets to see Winona's Big Brown Beaver.
Yeah, look though, this is not great pandemic programming.
No, it is not.
I mean, I'm sure it's gonna be great. Like, I really have nothing bad to say. I'm sure it's gonna be great. Philip Roth is great. David Simon's great. All the acting should be great. But it's a lot. It's a lot right now.
And in the current moment, right, like we were sort of talking about how some of the gags in Brockmire remind us of, you know, today, feel prescient. It's just so much easier to swallow it in that form than
yep.
the, you know, obvious parallels to today that this show has to offer.
Yeah.
Just to say that it's not, you know, that it's not well done or well thought or any of it.
Or even important. Just, I mean, it probably is important. But my God, it's a little like being poked with needles.
A little bit.
Important.
Wish this would have come back 2-3 months ago.
Yeah.
Where all that stuff would have still been true, but it wouldn't have been quite so...
grim.
Yeah.
It's so damn grim now. But, it's hard for me to even talk about it, to be totally honest.
Yeah. No, I sort of feel the same way. I'm going to keep watching, but it's not one of those things where I'm going to be like, sweet, it's Monday night, Plot Against America's coming on. You know?
No, it feels – homework is not the right word, but it feels like a commitment or something.
Yeah. Right now it feels like the kale portion
right.
on my plate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, although I'm a kale guy, so I'm not going to dis kale. But
kale can be delightful.
Mean. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And great for me. And I'm pretty sure I'll be glad I ate it at the end of the day.
Right.
But, you know, you got to psych yourself up for it a little bit sometimes.
Uh-huh.
You know, and whatever your kale is, if, you know, there's some other superfood or whatever you're into, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Chia seeds.
Or not as into, that's
goji
fine.
Goji berries,
yeah.
You know, whatever it is.
Yeah, chickpeas or something. You know what I mean?
Chickpeas. Fun fact, did you know you can take, like, the gooey chickpea water from a can of chickpeas and use it as an egg replacement in baking?
That is interesting.
Yeah.
You've been hanging out with some vegans, I'm guessing.
No, my wife is allergic to eggs.
Oh. There you go.
Applesauce also works in a pinch.
All right.
Yeah.
Neither
of them leave a taste in the final product, interestingly enough.
This sounds like a Top Chef challenge at some point.
Yeah, eggless baking. That's a good one. Although, I don't know if they probably can't bake, these people.
Yeah, you know, this does seem like there'll be a baking challenge that some good chef will go home on at some point.
Like, baking is a really different skill set than cooking.
Yeah, sure is. Sure is. We got a whole other show for it now.
Not just one, Derek. Not just one.
Fair enough. All right. Are you ready to talk some homework?
I think I am.
Because We actually, it's weird because we had all this stuff last week. We struggled a little bit this week. There's a movie coming out on Netflix called Big Time Adolescence with Pete Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
That looks interesting. We're gonna watch that.
Isn't it on Hulu?
It might be on Hulu. Yeah, you're right. Sorry. Apologize.
It's all right.
Wait, no, actually, are we sure? I don't know. Can you look that up for me? While we're talking?
Yep.
Okay. We're also going to check in on Better Call Saul.
It is on Hulu.
It is on Hulu. Thank you. Spoiler alert, Better Call Saul's still good.
Yes.
I don't want to tip off next week too bad, but still good. And then Dispatches from Elsewhere, which really could go. We could be anything. We could say anything about that show.
No,
prove us wrong. and then there's a movie that I thought was on Amazon Prime. I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon Prime, called Blow the Man Down.
Yes.
Featuring character actress Margot Martindale, among others.
Correct.
And shout out for you BoJack fans out there. And then I'm going to throw this out there. Kolsky, if you want to watch this, you can. I'm going to invite everyone who's holed up for this week and just probably desperate for something to watch. Now that FX, all of FX is on Hulu, I have gone back to watch the show Carriers, which was a one-season show from Sean Ryan, who did The Shield. And some other things. It stars Donald Logue and a guy whose work I'm not quite familiar with, to be honest, as two kind of...
Wait, who's the... what's his name?
Private Eyes in San Diego. I'm going to look up the guy's name, sorry. And it's just one of those shows that was, you know, beloved, and one of those that was like, hey.
Oh, that guy. He's from True Blood. I love that guy.
Michael Raymond James is his name.
He was in True Blood.
Ah, okay.
Among other things.
They're going around solving crimes. There's like a sort of a mystery for the week and some overarching serialized stuff. And, it's just one of those shows that people are like, this show is before its time and it shouldn't have been canceled, but it only lasted a season. And I've always heard great things. Alan Sepinwall recommended this as your stay and watch, and I think he's pretty sharp about TV.
All right.
So I'm going to go back and check it out. So I'm watching Terriers. I'm one episode in, which is why I can't explain more about it at this point. But I'm enjoying it, and I would encourage you all to watch more.
All right. I'm going to check that out. Terriers it is.
So there you go, and that will be on Hulu as well. So it's going to be a Hulu-y week for me,
and of course,
because their app doesn't work, it annoys me.
And of course, we'll be back with another episode of Top Chef.
Yes, yeah, we'll be talking Top Chef every week as well. So you should probably watch that. We'll tape the show right after.
Wait, what?
Right, we tape the show right after Top Chef.
I thought you were telling people to tape whatever was on Bravo after Top Chef, which I think was something with Andy Cohen.
Watch What Happens Live. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Okay, good.
Watch What Happens Live.
All right, I'm glad we're on the same
page. Which will not be live at any point in the foreseeable future. So,
no.
Don't even bother. Yeah, you're fine.
All right.
Watch Top Chef. We'll talk about that next week, and then, you know, stay safe out there, everybody.
Yeah, really, that's the biggest thing I think we all understand is stay home, avoid people, and be as safe as you can.
Yeah.
All right. On that incredibly bright and sunny note, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.